Thank you for joining us today at the Thai Podcast. Welcome to the show. And we'll talk about the shipping today. We will talk about the shipping.
I can't wait.
Like hunting or like any sort of great game where, by definition, it would no longer be something that is worth playing, worth dedicating so much time to.
If every day was good.
If it didn't disappoint you most of the time.
Like, there's a brain mechanism that of like, if you're more focused on process and less on today's result is not the be-all end-all, then today's result can be bad. You can accept it to be bad, and that makes bad not scary, so you can be free, right? I agree. I know what you're referring to, and when you're playing tournament golf, especially, that's like, if that's like what your schedule of golf revolves around, is practice round, three or four rounds of golf, and then nothing for a month and a half sometimes. But you like go really hard in those little chunks. So I absolutely know what you're talking about. And that's what I'm hoping 2024 is. And it's up to me ultimately, but, I want it to be more competitive golf. I want to play the state mid-am stuff, the state am stuff, the U.S. mid-am qualifier. And it's just, I don't know. I don't know what's the block. I don't know what's the wall between me and that. Maybe it's just me letting myself realize that maybe I deserve it. I don't know.
What's the golden star target? Like, is it 6 events a year or 7? It's got to be somewhere in that ballpark.
Yeah. I mean, it'd probably be like across April to October, one a month would be really nice, right? April, May, June, July, August, September, October, 7, 8. I don't know what I just counted. But yeah, it's like 6, 7 events. I would feel like that was full. That was nice. I always had something to look forward to and practice for. And I got my fix regularly throughout the year, and that might be too much, right? It might, 3 or 4 would probably be plenty for me at this point, but for me, it's a matter of like, I've got something to look forward to. I've got a reason to go hit balls. And that's how I relate to it. I don't even know if that's what I would tell like a client of mine, if that's a good reason to, like you need that thing to pull you into the future, but that's how I personally relate to it right now.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. You may have just kind of answered it there, Josh, but when you use the term fix, like for you, cause I know what the answer is for me. What is the fix out of competitive golf for you?
Man, that's such a good question. And it's a good question because I probably don't have a great quick answer. It's gotta be the creative outlet or the juices that get flowing that competitive golf brings out that nothing else does. Like I could do like a webinar with 17 college players on a big golf team and that gets juices flowing, but the juices are just for a different thing or they just feel different. And it's just so much more, I don't know, maybe it's like selfish juices or something.
It has to be, right?
Right. There's Yeah. I'm not channeling my juices into helping others. It's like, this is for me and that feels nice. And getting to a place where I can allow myself to have that is probably my biggest hurdle where, you know, I'm trying to grow a business. I'm trying to do this and that. I'm trying to stay busy. I'm trying to be a good husband and dad, but I still deserve something, I guess. So honestly, like that's, I go to like a counselor therapist guy, and that's like honestly a ton of our conversations is I don't know, like self-care boundaries, like setting up times to allow myself, because I can get into workaholic mode real easy and never give myself that time. So yeah, it's letting myself be selfish, and golf is an amazing outlet because I'm really introverted. I'm really intrinsically motivated. So golf is just the perfect sweet spot for that for me. So I think that's, I don't know, Henry, you said you have a good answer for it. What's the fix for you?
Yeah, I just love the competitive side of it. You know, whether you're super prepared or not, like obviously the goal is always going to be to show up and be able to actually look yourself in the mirror and tell yourself you can probably compete pretty well. But somewhat regardless of whether or not that's the case, when you get out there, you got to just go try to be competitive and be an athlete and compete. And that's the part that I really enjoy. And I think as I've gotten older, I've gained more, just like more passion and respect for how hard it can be and being able to appreciate it when it's good and bad, because, you know, there are days when you're making every 7-footer and you're hitting 230 yard shots to 8 feet. And there are days where you're not even looking at the green from 230 yards, and I can't make putts from 4 feet. And we'll talk about the chipping today. We will talk about the chipping.
I can't wait.
But I think it's just the, you know, it's the respect for how fun it is when it is fun that also drives in you, like, hey, you got to go through the stuff that's not so good to ever be able to enjoy that side of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Walker, I know this is you guys' podcast, but I like knowing this about other people.
No, this is great. I love the back and forth.
Yeah. There. Walker, do you have a similar, like, I need competitive golf, I need it in my life?
I think Henry and I were similar in one aspect, and that was when school ended, we were both ready to put down the clubs. I certainly was. I had been playing competitively for 13 or 14 years straight at that point. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what it felt like without it. And I would say, yes, I don't crave competitive golf. It's certainly not something that I need. And if it was, I would have played more in the last 3 years. However, I think the competitive creative outlet, you mentioned it, Josh, like, and I agree with that. Almost a direct correlation between what you and Henry said, which is, yes, I love that it's a creative outlet in the sense where, you know, you go tee it up, you walk off the first tee, it's your project now for 18 yeah. holes. It is your day's work.
Yeah.
And you get out of it what you put into it. And you get to essentially show off your preparation in a way, or your skill, or, you know, whatever. But I also look at it from the sense of, like Henry does, where, like, hunting or like any sort of great game where, by definition, it would no longer be something that is worth playing, worth dedicating so much time to,
if every day was good.
If it didn't disappoint you most of the time, given the fact that you still put a lot of effort into the thing. So that's why I love it, and I still, I'd be a liar if I said I didn't crave. There's nothing to me, that does what golf does in that respect. I think other sports do, and I've gotten deeper into golf than anything else, but my goodness, is it a perfect test for, again, Josh, I agree with you. It's a perfect test for my personality, at least the way I've come to look at it.
Yeah.
So I do miss that about it.
Yeah.
But there's also this piece that the three of us are in, but probably a shade different for each of us. Would love to hear some color on this, where I feel as connected to the game, or at times more connected to the game, through talking to people who view it in different ways. Josh, you do this with working people who are playing at a really high level because they do it in different ways. Mm. And Henry is one of the few people that I know who is like very focused on work, yet playing at a really high level. Mm. To be able to just like fly to to Nebraska and go qualify for the USAM, teeing it up against 80 guys who are like working, like actively working to get better at this thing every day.
Yeah. A bunch of college golfers.
is really cool. Yeah. So that's a different perspective as well. Any color there, go for it.
Yeah. That's part of the complicated relationship now is with golf is the holding in mind how I used to be, how good I used to be at golf, and then how little effort I've been able to put in now. And then when I show up, what do I expect of myself? So I would like to think I'm a Henry Schimpf and able to just show up. And that's probably taken away. Like Henry is a good player and maybe still puts a little effort in to maintain being a good player.
It's also a needle in a haystack sort of moment that we're pretending is just my personality here.
Right. But anyway, I'd like to think I'm that guy where because I was a good player at one point, I've attained a level where it will just never go away. But I have had to continually chip away at that in myself to where I can show up and let the day unfold instead of expect it to be a certain way. So I can no longer, I could never just show up somewhere and just muster a golf game because, for example, I played the US Mid-Am qualifier. I think it was US Mid this past summer. And the course was baked out. It was windy. They were doing tough pins. And I shot 6 over 78. And I walked off saying, that was probably my A- game, right? I'm happy with that score. And that was actually kind of a realization, maybe a tipping point for my golf career was I am no longer the golfer that I used to be. I need to, maybe I've lost most of my skill at this point that had just accumulated into habit. Now it has, those habits have waned and now it's time. I would need to develop habits again in order to become a good player again, good enough to qualify for these kind of things. Right. So I think it was like my tank finally ran out of like stored up skill. And now it's kind of, I've got to start from scratch, not literally scratch. I'm probably worse than scratch now. If I was honest about posting every score. So the complicated relationship is I've got to let go of what I used to be in the game and see my game as it is now for the day. And that brings up a term of acceptance, right? Accepting my game as it is, which lets me play as good as possible now, but and that allows me to not fight myself all day. Why am I not better? Why am I not hitting better shots? Why am I mishitting shots? Why am I missing 7-footers that used to, I would probably make more often. So it lets me be more, it lets me enjoy it more in the moment, but also allows me to not be so emotional and foggy and illogical to say, I need to get back to work. I'm not as good as I used to be, and that's okay. Which now it's kind of like back to the word you use. It's now kind of a project, right? Mm-hmm. To go from where I am to, okay, I'm getting back in US mid-ams on a regular basis, which is probably too big of a goal at this point. I'm getting back into state level stuff. I'm finishing top 30 in pretty simple qualifiers. Like, okay, we're getting somewhere now. So that's the project. But I'm afraid that I'm going to just sign up for a bunch of events, play the practice round and the event and nothing else. And that was kind of just a fix, right? It wasn't really, I didn't go at it like a project. So I need to kind of create some intentional structure for myself for that to even be a project. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty far from that, I would imagine, just mentally looking at this like this is a project that I'm going to work at, right? When I'm, there's so many other things in my life. Like I need to clean my car, right? Like that, I can't go like set out on 2 hours of working on my golf game when my car is an absolute mess. Like little things like that, that just like, you don't deserve it. You haven't earned it. You don't deserve it. You haven't earned it. So I don't know if that's a lie I'm telling myself or if that's true. I don't know. Constantly thinking about that. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
I'd like to file a motion, Josh, after what you said there. That was great, A, but B, that resonated so much and terrified me. You talking about how the, you know, the tank is kind of empty of what your game used to be. Yeah. I mean, that's, I don't know if it's 6 months away from me or if it's a year and a half away, but it's coming and it scares me. So there's no better pivot in an episode than to go straight to the dirt, drinking, eating, reading, thinking. I think we got coffee there to start us off with the D. So Josh, we got to do it. What have you been drinking, eating, reading, and thinking lately?
Yeah. So I've got a, in preparation for dirt, I've done some deeper thinking. I've kind of got a, what am I drinking, but also what I'm not drinking, which I think is just as important. I am drinking my second K-cup of the morning. I'm not fancy like you guys where I'm doing all the special drips and special grinds and stuff. You guys are very, very sophisticated. I'm not. I'm press a button, get it into my system as quickly as possible. But what I'm not drinking is alcohol. And why I think this is important, for me to say, and just right up front, there's absolutely nothing wrong with alcohol. But for me, I was noticing that I was going to it as kind of a crutch, kind of a, emotional regulator, as like a buffer between me and like social situations. And, I wasn't just doing it purely for the enjoyment of it, right? It became a little bit more unhealthy, and I didn't abuse alcohol. It wasn't like to that level, but you know, I just noticed it in myself, right? I was doing this thing, which I'm probably doing with caffeine in a lot of ways and with lots of other stuff in my life.
Here's but that.
Yeah, I noticed it especially with alcohol, and alcohol has a tendency to maybe be a little more, we'll call it addictive in that way. So it was leading to more, it was causing more problems than it was solving. So that's my, what am I drinking? What am I not drinking? I thought it could maybe help a listener out there.
Love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love some cocktail. Oh, by the way, I hear a good Bud Light really just oils up the chipping gears, but that's for another.
Yeah.
Discussion.
Bring your six pack. That's going to be my advice on the chipping. Definitely.
You leave all the other stuff behind, but a cost is you don't have those soft elbows anymore.
Right. So. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, are you guys both drinking coffee this morning?
I'm on,
already have probably will have a little bit more in a bit.
Yeah. I'm on my second cup of half calf today.
Okay. I should probably look at half calf.
Walker, where'd you get that half calf? Let's just,
I was just going to say that.
Or on the P's and Q's here.
Yeah. We're going to, we'll hook Josh up with some K pods because, Good Walk does do K pods as well. But, this is the Thai podcast blend. It is half caffeinated. You can get it for 20% off at goodwalkcoffee.com. Highly recommend you do so. It's for golfers and also people too. So get after it.
Hmm. Yeah. I need to look into half calf because I probably spike myself way too strongly. I need to ease into it. And I've been looking a lot into like, maybe the science or the neuroscience of, sleeping and what caffeine does and how it interrupts it. So it's like, if you're like ingesting a high amount of caffeine first thing in the morning, it's terrible for you, basically is the takeaway. So trying to wait a little longer to get that first cup, or maybe half calf could be a good, cause I love the ritual of the drinking of the warm thing in the morning and the taste. Mm. So half calf would probably be a good, blend, no pun intended, of that kind of concept that I'm going for. I don't know, have you ever, have you guys, and I'm interested in this selfishly from you guys, have you ever looked into like low acidity coffee? Do you guys know anything about that?
Yeah, this is funny. Henry, do you have a take on this? Because I got a take, but I want to give you some space.
None. You guys go for it.
I have a place down the street that I frequent. They do some cold plunges and coconuts and the whole deal. Great people. And they have an item on their menu that says that that they have alkaline coffee. And I'm thinking to myself, wait, coffee's quite acidic. Something's alkaline, it means it's basic. How does that work? Is there, are they different beans? Is this a process that they use? And I think I brought it up on a Mudball Monday about 7 or 8 months ago. Anyways, it's bullshit. It's not a thing. It's a marketing tool, I think. Coffee is acidic. Okay. I think they market it, if you have beans that are less acidic by a certain margin, you can claim that they're like alkaline beans, but they're all acidic.
Okay.
So
okay,
that's what that's I heard.
Marketing. Okay, so when I'm thinking like, man, I feel like I get heartburn after a cup of coffee or a couple of cups of coffee, I need to look, because I've heard someone, yeah, we've been drinking low acidity coffee or whatever. I'm like, oh man, that maybe that sounds good for me, but wrong, like straight up.
Limes are alkaline, or they're limes and lemons. All citrus is acidic, but when your body processes lime, it turns it alkalines your blood, your body, which is weird. I don't think coffee's an issue. Okay. I know people who don't drink coffee, people are on the coffee alternatives, the cachava, the mudwaters, no free ads. We can bleep those out. But I think if you're hydrating and then eating, you know, proper food and you cut it off at a decent time, like I think you're good.
Yeah.
Okay. But don't take my word for it. Listen to the Hubes or
a lot of it's from Hubes. Yeah. Like I've never heard him referred that way. It could be completely anecdotal, and I've never done like I'm experiencing heartburn. What have I had in the last hour to correlate that? I've never done that kind of study on myself. I definitely should. And it's probably related to something else. Cause like sometimes I'll get a drink of water and I'll experience the feeling of heartburn. So, probably way more times than not, coffee does not end up in some kind of heartburn. So to your point, if it's marketing and it's BS and it's actually not the thing causing it, I shouldn't get too much in my head about it.
Josh, before eating, how many of your clients are steadfast, regular coffee drinkers, maybe on the full caffeinated side? Does anybody stay away from it because of the competitive golf?
That's interesting. And it doesn't come up a bunch, but it has come up. The only time that comes to mind is, I have a college golfer female who decidedly does not drink caffeine. She's the only one that I know doesn't, but when I'm doing video calls with clients, almost everyone has like got some kind of cup of something that they're sipping on. Even if it's 3 p.m. So I can't tell what's in that cup. I don't ask them. It would be interesting. And I probably should look more into it, into the like day of a performance type of thing. Mm-hmm. I know a little bit, but not enough. So I don't have some solid thoughts on what is like, should you be drinking caffeine during your pre-round range session? You guys might even know more about that than me, but clients doesn't come up much, but I'm going to start asking because I'm interested. Yeah. But I would guess 90% of them are drinking coffee. Yeah.
Love that. Yeah. All right. Anyway, sorry. We kind of hijacked Earth there. Have you been eating?
Eating. So I don't, I don't have a like a fun answer for this, but I thought of a like a recent example. We went, my wife's birthday was on January 5th, and last January for her birthday, we went to this really nice Italian place. Well, it's really nice because it's like, you're going to spend $120, right? And so they can, it seems really nice, right? But it was, we had a terrible experience last year, last January, 2023. And like her chicken parm tasted like dish soap. It was awful. Yeah. And it was like a hockey puck consistent. It was just like really, really bad. My lasagna was decent. And, you know, $130, thanks, goodbye. So this January, we were in the lead up to her birthday. We were thinking, where should we go? And we said, maybe we're ready to get hurt again. So we went to it, which is like maybe crazy. Why would you go to somewhere you're going to spend a ton of money and your one time experiencing it was bad? But we, you know, we went
sounds
in
like pulling out a wedge.
We went in with open eyes.
Time to get hurt again.
And we said, let's try it again. And it was amazing. We went with my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, her brother. And it was delicious. We had a great time. I decided to intentionally, like thoughtfully, have a glass of wine, right? Instead of like, I need two. Like, how quickly can I get to my second glass, right? So yeah. It was a very thoughtful, enjoyable meal. And I think it was better for it. So there's some redemption there, right? Don't have a one and done mentality, right? Like be open to experiencing something again, like sitting in the, as we'll get to with chipping, it's like, be open to an experience, even if you think it might not be great, like still be open to it. So, yeah.
We talk about that with golf courses too. It's like, if you go to a place you feel like you would really enjoy and you didn't enjoy it and it was serious, you really didn't have a good time out there, something wasn't right, you should probably go again, you know? Sweetens yep. Cove is a good example of this. I've had a lot of people go to Sweetens Cove and they say, yeah, I don't get all the hype, you know? Mm. Take another spin, you know? Go around there one more time.
Yeah, you'll probably have a much better. Yeah. Right. It might be something you're bringing to it or you're projecting onto it or you had it built up to a certain level.
Or it's just probably better than, like for the restaurant example, it's like you caught them on a bad day, you know?
Yeah.
It's not that the restaurant's terrible. It's that you just caught them on a really bad day. So you're actually fairly likely to have a grand time around.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we always say like if we have a regular restaurant that we go to and it was bad, we'll just say, I think we got the bad chef or something. Like we're not gonna stop. Like we've enjoyed this too much in the past to just stop. Golf course example. I don't ever really go to a golf course and say that was awful. I'm never going back there. I grew up on rinky dink public golf courses. Part of me likes that. So I don't have that experience with golf courses, but I can imagine, right? Like a really nice place that everyone says is amazing and there's hype mm-hmm. and there's a million blog posts about it and YouTube videos about it. It's going to be amazing. And then it's just like, meh. I can understand that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you go around Augusta, get 10 mud balls, you're like, I feel like this should be something different, you know?
Right. I'm cleaning off those mud balls, man. If I'm at Augusta, I'm setting it up on the nice grass. Yeah. Yeah.
What have you been reading?
Yeah. I've been reading. I spend a lot of my time in like scientific research and studies and that kind of like neuroscience, psychology. I spend a lot of my time doing that. Because I'm trying to not just take other people's word for it, but trying to own the information for myself. And I guess I'm trying to ingest all of this like boring sciencey stuff and form it in my own mind so that I can spit it out in a good way, a helpful way to other people, instead of, like we mentioned, Huberman Lab. He maybe does that for like 10% of his podcast. Most of it's like, here's the mechanisms and the neuroscience and the biology. And it's just, it might not be super approachable to golfers, maybe, in a lot of ways. So I try to take in all the craziness, crazy information, and turn it into, here's how I can help you. So that's what I spend all of my, like, when I get to read, I spend a lot of doing that. And I'm reading a couple books also. Every morning I've set a timer for 10 minutes so that I can get a consistent amount of reading time. Right now I'm reading something called Reasonable Faith, which is like a Christian apologetics book that's like kind of proving the existence of God, or he looks like at all the scientific theories on, you know, how was the universe created? Like, it's insanely deep. And I'm reading about like string theory and the multiverse and stuff at like 5:30 in the morning. And I catch myself sometimes like, what am I doing? But it's like really interesting to me. And I'm also reading a book called Mindset by Carol Dweck, which is about kind of growth mindset, fixed mindset. So I try to keep like hit all the pockets of the things that I'm trying to learn when mm-hmm. I'm reading. Yeah.
I like that. What's been on the mind? Thinking.
Yeah. I've mentioned it a little bit already, but I'm always trying to think about balancing work and life. I just went to my counselor therapist guy yesterday, and we talked a lot about this. We always talk about how much I tie my identity up into work, mm-hmm. right? And to a major fault. And I'm always working on releasing that and maybe being more thoughtful of where that story is coming from in my head, right? Like, why do I need to work to have self-worth, right? So, mm-hmm. I'm almost constantly thinking about that, trying to be more thoughtful. Okay, why am I on Twitter right now, right? Why, when I told my wife I would be down at 4 p.m., why am I still up here at 4:15, right? Like, what am I trying to get out of this? What am I, so that has a deeper component in me of you're pushing, you're trying to work too hard to satisfy something in you. So trying to be more thoughtful there, always thinking about that.
Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. Henry, I know we've got some listener questions. We've got a variety of things to hit today. Take us somewhere.
Yeah, let's eat the frog. Let's talk about chipping first. And I'm going to defer to you here, Walker. So when Josh and I spoke about 8 months ago, or whenever, Josh, you were kind to have me on your podcast, we had a really good conversation. We did at some point kind of veer into the weeds that are chipping for the two of us. And I spoke on some of my long-term struggles with what is chipping. And Walker and I have certainly found a lot of community in that, among other things, over the years as podcast co-hosted friends. So Walker, seeing again, as Josh and I have already talked about this, and I will get in the game here in a moment, but why don't you take a moment here to talk a little bit about your background with chipping and you know, all of the complexities that come with it?
This is a question I never wanted to handle publicly.
This is part of the healing process.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like this is a therapeutic moment here.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, so much so that I've kind of brushed this one under the rug a little bit. Like, I need to peek under the rug and see mm-hmm. if there are any dragons under there or anything.
This is exactly what we need.
God. My battles with chipping began probably in the beginning of college, I would say. Henry may have some archived knowledge that says maybe it was late high school, but I do remember being a very proficient chipper And with golf, I think where a lot of this flip-flop occurs is when one part of your game starts to improve, the other starts to just break at all the important parts. There wasn't some major catalyst. I just remember struggling to chip on Zoysia, which should not happen.
Yeah, that's a
total. That should be the easiest.
Exactly.
Zoysia, and then the second one was Paspalum. I was in Kiowa Island playing in one of my first collegiate events. And I was with a teammate of mine at the time, Andrew Novak, who is currently on the PGA Tour and who's a very proficient chipper, short gamer of the golf ball. And I remember chipping next to him. We were hitting 45-yard pitches, and he says, "God, I love this stuff. I can just hit it anywhere I want and nip it or let it run out or do whatever." And I'm sitting there thinking, I can't get the ball to go more than 6 feet. I'm like trying to catch ball first. I'm trying to figure out how to use the bounce. And from that point forward, I don't remember much good coming from my chipping. So the story that I'm not telling is that I guess I've always been decent at just planning my way around a golf course, which is why I think I was able to survive okay for, you know, it was kind of weird. I never won in college, but I knocked on the door a couple times, and I felt like major credit there was some good driving of the golf ball and just pretty decent course management, maybe a good putter. I've always been a little bit of a streaky putter. But short game is one of those things where if you are playing quite well, you can be selectively good at it, or you can just put yourself in spots that make it pretty easy on you. Like, if you do that, I think you can still come out with pretty good rounds of golf. But I really haven't uncovered a better short game. Now that's because of lack of practice. But I think it was weaponized. Like, it was even worse when I was playing, because it was the one area of my game that I really got in my own head. And I'd love your thoughts on that. If either of y'all want to expand on the mentality of chipping, I just, there's something about emotion that anybody who has the athletic ability to sit in a chair should be able to chip, right? I mean, it doesn't take muscles. It doesn't take flexibility. You just need to be able to move the club in some sort of fashion. And when you know deep down that you're struggling to do the thing that you can visualize, I think it's even harder for good players, that they have no problem visualizing the kind of shot they want to hit. But then there's just like a clear break where you cannot do the thing that you're visualizing. Repeat it over and over and over. I think that can be pretty damaging. So that's what happened to me. And I think just my whole time playing competitive golf, I learned how to play around that. And never really took the time or asked simple enough questions to the right people to say, "Hey, I'm pretty bad. Like, what are we gonna do about this?" So,
I think that's a really good jumping off point there, because I feel very similarly that, like, golf and tournament golf is so interesting in that I think it's extremely important to know what you are trying to play around and how you. Oftentimes, I mean, everyone to some degree is playing a bandage duct tape game that they're just trying to get the ball in the hole as quickly as you can. And, you know, even if you are accepting a potential five, a five is better than a six, you know? And so there are times when you look at a shot and say, yeah, I might not have the right shot, but I know where the wrong shot might come out. So I'm going to do something in between to save one. But Josh, I'm sure this is something that you handle a lot with your clients, talking about, okay, how do you get around the course the best? But then also, what does long-term improvement look like? And how do we not always have that bandaged mentality? Anything there that you would expand upon that feels applicable to what you do on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I do. I do talk about this a lot with players, and the thing is, it seems to happen more with the smaller strokes and swings than bigger, like full swing irons, full swing drivers. I do have guys that would say that they have the driving yips, that kind of thing. And my point is, this is like chipping for you, both of you, is just the outlet of something deeper psychologically, something maybe fear-based going on. You know, it's to me, it's the same thing as like what I've learned, it's the same thing as let's say you get in a car wreck on a certain road, and now every time you, like, it's on your commute to work, so now every time you go drive to work, you take a longer way and you avoid that area because it seems scary to you. It seems like that could happen again, right? I don't want to experience that. I just get bad vibes when I go through here. Or it's like, it's debilitating as I go through here. I start to extremely tense up. And so it's like, I think the same psychological, neurological things happen with both of those things, right? Where you experience, you know, some people it's like the one time, and maybe Walker, for you, it was kind of that Kiowa situation. I don't know if it was like, some people have like one bad, horrible, traumatic, might be too strong of language, but
it's not for me. Yeah,
it's not strong enough.
Is exactly right. Yeah, we could go like further.
You just chunk the same chip 4 times in a row and it just keeps rolling back to your feet. You're just watching the strokes tally up.
Not right. Good. Right. So that's like the car wreck on your commute to work, right? Now every time you even think about it, the blood starts boiling. And on a brain level, that's like your brain saying, whoa, 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 there's something scary here, life-threatening here. We need to avoid this thing. Why would we even get close to the thing that could potentially kill us, right? So we're going to completely avoid it. And that can look like, I'm going to bump and run an 8-iron. I'm going to putt from 30 yards out. Like, that could be the type of avoidance. The other type of avoidance could be, I'm sweeping it under the rug, I'm not going to talk about it. Chipping, every time I talk about chipping, it's this big, bad, scary thing, or I'm going to try to ignore it. All of those are coping mechanisms, but they don't solve the issue, right? They, like Henry said, those are bandage versions. But in order to stop putting band-aids on top of band-aids, you have to take off the band-aids and actually clean the wound, address the actual deeper wound. And in psychology and like in therapy, and it's like naming it, looking at it, right, facing it, right, and talking about it like this is like kind of the first way. And again, back to Huberman, one thing that he talked about, and this matches so many of the other things I've seen, but he said like the term he uses is protocol, right? A protocol for getting over a traumatic event is to like relive it in like visceral detail, right? His thing was like, either saying it out loud to a counseling professional or writing it down. And, you know, there's people that are, it's like real trauma things that would be like dangerous to relive by themselves. They need someone there to guide them through it. But I would say for chipping, it could be like, I'm going to relive this kind of first inception of a moment, right? Or the conception of when this happened is, I'm going to relive this in visceral detail, is of exactly what happened, exactly what I felt, and I'm going to expose myself to it, right? Instead of, yeah, that happened one time. Yeah, that sucked. And now I'm a bad chipper. And yeah, man, everyone else is better than me, but you know, I figure it out. And instead of like dancing around it and ignoring it, it's okay. Right. What's the issue here? When did it start? What's going on? And I'm not afraid to look at it, because when you drive through that intersection that you got in a car wreck on your way to work, the first time it feels horrible, horribly uncomfortable. Then the second time, still uncomfortable, but wait, nothing bad is happening, right? Just because that happened 6 months ago doesn't mean it's going to happen right now. Third time, less and less acute, right? So working through it, facing it, right? Not sweeping it under the rug, picking up the rug and looking at it and cleaning what's there. That gets at starting to diminish how big of a deal this is, how life-threatening it seems, right?
So I don't know. That's kind of the long-term version. And then
yes,
one thing I've always been curious about is, like, it's arguably one of the best parts about golf is that nobody cares. It's 45
other
degrees.
People don't care. Right.
It's 45 degrees. You've got a slight rain going on. You know that your chipping's not very good, but guess what? Your tee time's in 40 minutes and you got to go out and play.
Right.
One of the things that got me through all right was I had two opposites in front of me. And I would just pick one, right? So with my chipping, I would say, okay, well, am I going to focus on target or technique when I'm playing? It's like, I know that target's better for me, so I choose target. Do I want to try to control this motion, or do I want to feel soft? I want to feel soft. And it's like, if I chunk one or don't make the kind of contact I want by focusing on the target and feeling soft, then I had to make peace with that. Whereas if I was hitting poor chip shots by trying to be too technique focused or, whatever else, then I would kind of kick myself for that. That was the only thing that I could kick myself for in those moments, because we're not long-term learning. We're not getting better today. We are just competing.
Coping. Yeah.
So, for your players who are in the middle of, they're in the middle of a 6 month stretch of heavy golf and they know they don't have their best stuff. How different are those discussions versus the winter rebuild type thing?
I personally don't think they're different. And, but what this requires on a more zoomed out level is more of a long-term patience, right? I'm not just trying to get through these 6 months. I'm trying to use these 6 months as a way to improve myself. So in the moment, I could slap a Band-Aid on it, right? And for the next 6 months, slap Band-Aids on it. And, you know, I might improve my ability 20%, right? We're making things up. It might not get better at all, right? You might just feel better that because you're trying something, but it might actually not be any better. Or it is, or it might be a little bit better. So you can get 20% like better right now, or you can slowly work on it and get 1% better every time across 6 months. And on the 20% better right now, like, let's just like in Need for Speed game, you hit the NOS button to just like get fast right now, right?
Yeah.
And but you are like in Mario Kart, it like after you do that it slows you down or something, so you you do the thing to make yourself really, really good or a little bit marginally better right now, but by the end of the 6 months you've maybe even created more bad habits, or you've been doing, you've been trying something that's actually worse So you end up like worse off, right? Because you try to get a quick fix, mm-hmm. you end up worse off. And instead it would be, okay, let's actually address this and chip away at this. Again, no pun intended. chip away at it slowly every day. Let's address this every day. And by the end of the 6 months, we've actually moved towards almost eliminating this, right? So practically, that I think that looks like, okay, today we're not under any guise that it's going to be good, right? I'm not going to go out and try to make it be good, right? I'm like going to the bad Italian restaurant again. I'm open to any experience today, right? It might be great. It might be terrible. And that acceptance allows you to kind of navigate freely within the present. So I would say, to make it as practical as possible, how I would talk with a player would be, on the given shot, you're kind of doing a small version of the, like, write down the traumatic thing in the moment. In the small version, you're saying, okay, what's the worst case scenario here? Right. I'm about to, like, there's a bunker between me and the pin, and the flag is on, you know, four, right on the other side of the bunker. I'm into the grain, right? It's like dormant Bermuda, right? Like, okay, so what's actually the word? I know it's nasty, right? Yeah. Like, that's disgusting. I hate this time of year. But this, that's the reality of it. And you say, okay, what's the worst case scenario here? All right, worst case scenario, I don't know. What would be each of your worst case scenario
that
in
would,
that moment?
That would be it. Flop yeah. over yes. the bunker, into the green.
No, I actually go slightly a different way than over the bunker. For me, and maybe this opens a whole new can of worms here, for me, it is when there's clear decision making that has to take place, when it's like, I don't have to do this, but like, it's probably the thing to do.
Right.
When you're going over a bunker, to some degree, if it's a tight gut pin over a bunker, what are you going to do? Try to putt it through the bunker? I guess that is always an option, but fortunately I've never quite gotten bad enough where I'm going to try to putt around a bunker through a bunker or something like that. So when it's truly like there's nothing else to do here, I'm just like, you know, you've used the word, and I think it's probably the key word in all of this, Josh. You've used the word acceptance a number of times today. You're forced into acceptance when there's no decision to be made. But when you have a shot where it's like, all right, like I could kind of go soft here, hit a little bump and run, you know, do the cop out. Or I could do the right thing and try to improve long term, pull a wedge, see if I can use the bounce, you know. And then when you screw it up, then you kind of do all of this retroactive, God bless, I shouldn't have done that. I made a bad decision here and there. But I don't know, there's something about when you're forced into a decision, then you immediately are forced into acceptance as well. If you chunk it in the bunker, you say, well, you know what, like, that doesn't shock me. And I didn't make a bad decision. I made the only decision that there was to be made. So there's something really interesting about that. And taking it back to the analogy that you've used of going down a scary road, imagine if there's only one highway, there's truly one road to get to work. What, are you going to walk through the woods to work each day if it's 10 miles? You know, that's kind of how I think about this with chipping. Mm. Like when there are multiple different paths to be taken, that's where it almost feels as if there's more mental danger involved versus when there's just simply no selection in the matter.
Right. Right. So you, when given a choice to pursue what you want or avoid what you don't want, we're almost always going to avoid what we don't want. Right. We're going to take the comfortable way out, and it might not actually be comfortable. Right. It's still uncomfortable to, I mean, an 8-iron bump and run isn't that different from like a wedge shot, like a soft wedge. So like you can just as easily yip that. So we still, I think, exposing yourself, going down the scary road where the thing happened, exposing yourself to the thing you're uncomfortable with, and saying, I could duff this. I could leave it at my feet and I'm going to show myself that I can do it and quote unquote survive. And survival, like to your brain, you know, we've all at this point, we've all heard kind of fight or flight as a, like a survival mechanism, threat response mechanism. And so your brain's job is to like help you survive, that kind of deal. It doesn't know that you're hitting a chip or going down a scary road on your way to work. So it sees a threat and it says, okay, we need to just get through this and survive. So let's take the easy way and, or like, let's tense up and do the fear, fight or flight mode. And it just sends all the signals to say, let's just survive this and get fast and get out of here as quickly as possible. So if you say, I'm going to notice that urge, I'm going to notice my brain's urge, my, my threat response, autopilot, default brain, like my dumb brain's urge, mm-hmm. I'm going to notice that. And I'm going to say, no, right? I'm not going to just get through this. I'm going to be here for it. I'm going to be present for it. And I think of like to hopping in an ice bath, right? If you're setting a timer for 10 minutes in an ice bath, you could wish you were out of it that entire 10 minutes and be mm-hmm. tense. And I would probably be tense in an ice bath no matter what, but you could mentally be trying to hurry this up, or you could sit in it and say, I'm here in this discomfort. And the positive effects of that are incredible because you show your brain, you almost like tear down the scaffolding that your brain has built up of all these things that are scary. And you say, look, this is not actually life-threatening. You won't actually die if you try to hit a 60-degree wedge and fly it up over the ridge and one bounce and stop, right? We can try that and chunk it and you're fine. Like you're physically, literally fine. And then you experience this cascade of emotions afterwards, right? Just like when you're driving down the scary road, you experience all these emotions and they come up, they rise, and then they fall and like, oh, wait, that was extremely uncomfortable, but here I am, right? I'm still here. And no, that's not a good way to like shoot your best score in the moment, right? Again, so you do have to kind of make a personal choice of how much am I okay with shooting a bad score and working on this right now? And how much do I like, forget that. It's a USAM qualifier. Like I'm like, sorry, Josh, I'll get to this later. Right now I'm bump and run 8-iron. I'm going to putt it through the bunker. But if we're talking on a daily basis, what can we do to improve and get out of this is exposing yourself to it, leaning in, sitting in the discomfort, showing yourself you can survive. This isn't life threatening. So the reason why we're doing that, right? We're not just doing that because we're masochistic and just trying to experience pain. We are trying to show, like diminish the fear in a thing, right? If as long as you're afraid of something, you're going to respond protectively and you're going to get guidey and safe and tense and steery. And if there's nothing to be afraid of, then you don't play scared. You're free to just play. So we have to repeatedly show ourselves, this isn't scary. This isn't actually scary. This isn't scary. This isn't life-threatening. This isn't that bad. I'm fine. I chunked it. That sucked. I felt uncomfortable. I'm embarrassed, but I let myself experience that and here I am on the other side, right? So it's a continual exposure to it that decreases the perceived fear, perceived threat of it, mm-hmm. right? So I don't know. You guys might not leave this saying, okay, I know exactly what to do. I don't know. What are your thoughts on all this?
One way that I go with that is, you know, something I think about, whether it be, like an ice bath is a good example, or something in your work life, or whatever it may be. Anticipation, I would say 9 times out of 10, but in my experience, it is truly 10 times out of 10 is always worse than reality. And that'll come back and bite me at some point. But in my experience in life, we always make things out to be potentially much worse than they end up being. And you think back to it and you're like, shit, like I went into this Monday thinking today was going to be just horrible. Here I am, I'm going to bed, and maybe it did suck, but like it just was not even close to as bad as I thought it was going to be going in, you know, just as one random example. I think as we talked about with chipping, you know, the concept and just golf in general and anything, the concept of acceptance, I think that anticipation and acceptance are very closely related. It's so much worse walking up to a shot knowing that you're going to have to get uncomfortable on that shot than it is to hit the worst shot you possibly could hit. You know, like, I don't know, you lay the sod and you have to try it again. That's not super fun. But if you chunk it in the bunker, like I think about it for both myself and Walker, you have that shot over the bunker. There's only one thing to be done. You chunk it in the bunker. We're both pretty good bunker players. So it's like, well, okay, you know, that's water under the bridge. Now I've got a bunker shot and I threw a shot away, and it simply is what it is. There's no way that's any worse than the 100-yard walk or longer walk up there thinking about, oh my God, I got to get the wedge out and try to hit it over the bunker. So I think that that's a really good, something that I'm gathering here and thinking about is that, the acceptance piece, that's almost just like an overarching mindset to take into things. And then I think being highly cognizant anytime you're going into a shot and starting to, my coach always in college always referred to it as the squirrels juggling knives. Anytime you start to just cross wires and don't know what's going to happen and the anticipation's eating away at you, being highly cognizant of like that's the worst part if you let it be, right? Like if you can just tell yourself, like, I'm just anticipating something, it's not going to actually be that bad, then it probably will not be that bad. We're just chipping at the end of the day. Like we're sitting here and, you know, to some degree, and at times in your life, this stuff is life or death for people who are really into competitive golf. But I got into that to say, this all is very far from life or death.
Yes.
Henry, I agree with you in that respect. Josh, I also agree with you in the sense where as a competitor, I think all of our default settings are we're going to be the best competitor that we can be today. Therefore, as a coaching role, I think you're taking the right frame of mind, which is no, my value add is going to be almost forcing you in a way to look at long-term improvement, to make you get in the cold water and enjoy being there, or at least be present there. Versus training a golfer to be somebody who gets in the ice bath every day but hates every second of it or is not present in that moment. So I agree with you there. My brain is built in such a way to where I'm always very defensive of my round. I'm always that sort of cardboard duct taped science project type golfer out on the golf course, and we all have those days where we show up and everything is oiled and ready to go, and those days are truly what keep you coming back. But I just want to separate those two things, like the coaching aspect. I get the sense that you're intentionally putting your focus on long-term improvement. And I get the sense that that's because all great competitive golfers have this knack for squeezing the most out of what they have today, you know, and like, we're never going to just disregard that. Like we disregard the long-term improvement. If I can give up long-term progress for the score that I need today as a competitor, I will do that. And you'll do it tomorrow and the next day without somebody to say, hey, do you actually want to get rid of this problem? Or do you just want to be a professional at living with it? You know? That's all I have to add there.
Man, that's really well articulated. And in fact, I would say that maybe, not maybe, when you say you could either choose looking at long-term improvement or getting the better score today, yeah, I think that's a false dichotomy. I think choosing to focus more on long-term improvement allows you to play better today. Because, and the reason why I say that is, when you say, I care more about becoming a good golfer long-term, today's score doesn't, isn't the be-all end-all. Now that acceptance allows freedom to just play today. And if you are more freed up to play today, then you're going to probably be more present. You're probably going to make better swings, get better chips, make better putts. So when you say my game is duct tape and cardboard and I'm just trying to shoot a good score today, that's you trying to control it. And that's you saying a bad score today is unacceptable, right? So now you play all day afraid of a bad score. Mm. And if a bad score is fear worthy, you're going to play scared. You're going to play guidey. Every shot is to avoid a bad shot, because a bad shot would mean I'm not getting the thing that I wanted today, which is a good score. So by releasing that control, and the way to release that control, the best way that I've ever learned or experienced, is I'm just trying to become a better golfer, and today's result will be what it will be. Again, this is the cliche process over result, that whole deal. But there's a brain mechanism that of like, if you're more focused on process and less on today's result is not the be all end all, then today's result can be bad. You can accept it to be bad, and that makes bad not scary. So you can be free, right?
Mm. That was facts. That was very, very well said. Yeah, I feel like I just got exposed. That is how I think generally. So I see the misalignment there. That was great though. I enjoyed that.
Right. So it feels like in order to shoot a good score, I have to care more about score today. Mm-hmm. Right. That's what seems right. It seems like I'm at point A, I want to get to point B. So I'm going to control myself into getting to point B. Right. It makes, that usually works in work, right? Like I need to, in order to finish this spreadsheet, I need to do the work to finish the spreadsheet. It's very like one-to-one effort to result. Mm-hmm. And in the golf swing, it's very one-to-one effort and result, right? In a lot of ways of, I'm trying to get my path from -1 to +1. I need to just do this same drill over and over and over again, and I will get it eventually, right? Effort to result is pretty close to one-to-one. But with psychology, with the mental game, it doesn't work that way, where I am at A and I want to get to B. If the more effort that I apply to it, the more control I apply to it, the more the brain realizes there's a gap here, which sucks. And so when your brain checks in and says, we're still not at B, what are you doing? It actually, you move backwards from A. Now you look at yourself worse. You see yourself worse. So the more control you try to do, the more you try to make your brain do what you want it to do, it gets further away from where you want it to be. So if you accept how things are today, you accept that they might not be great today, then you naturally get to be, not by wanting to get to be, but it just naturally happens as a symptom. Right.
That makes sense.
I think you have to
walk through the desert.
Yep.
I think that goes into like, you know, self-perception and the kind of person that you view yourself as, which people talk about in other facets of life, I think, but maybe not as much in competitive or golf sort of endeavors, where it's like, are you, people talk about like fixed versus growth mindset. I think that talking about yourself as this band-aided golfer, you're fixing yourself to, well, I can't, you know, really go out here and try to grow today. Maybe I can grow over time, but you know, today's not the day. I have to just play with a bunch of band-aids on, versus saying like, you know, today is just, it's just another day. I'm just going to, you know, do as well as I can and try to continue this process of improvement. But that's how I view myself, as someone who is focused on continuing to get better each and every day. And today is one very small data point in the entire process of things. All of that being said, that sort of mindset is kind of what gets you to playing your best on that given day. So it's a very, it's a somewhat convoluted way of thinking and feels a little bit backwards, but I think in practice that probably manifests itself in a way that people wouldn't be too disappointed in.
Yes. And to mix analogies of letters, what I a lot of times say to players is, you're at A again, you're at A and you're trying to get to C. So a lot of players try to take the shortcut to get from A to C, but in order to get to C, you gotta go to B first, and you gotta like ignore the urge to go straight to C, right? So if you try to get straight to C, it's gonna make things worse. So you have to first go to B and then over to C. By going to B, you like, you get C as a bonus almost. So you, it's such an urge, right? And Walker, you kind of mentioned, the competitor in me needs a good score today. So yeah, you're, everything in you is like, what do I got to do today to get a good score? And that's an urge. That's like a, yeah, we'll call it our dumb brain, like urge, in the right same way of like choosing between broccoli and ice cream. The dumb brain urge is to get ice cream, but you know, like your smart brain knows I should choose broccoli here. And if I'm going to choose ice cream, it's, I'm at least going to choose it thoughtfully, right? I'm not mm-hmm. just going to like go with every urge that I experience. Mm-hmm. And repeatedly showing yourself, repeatedly doing the harder thing, repeatedly noticing the urge to do the thing and resisting it and choosing the more thoughtful approach, that trains your brain to be more thoughtful ongoing. And now every time you play, you say, okay, how do I want today to go? Who do I want to be today? I'm not going to just be following my emotions and my urges all day, being driven by my brain. I'm the driver here. I'm choosing, okay, I've got a chip here. I am terrified of what it could be. The outcome is completely uncertain, but I can accept all that, right? I can imagine the scenario where I, like the worst case scenario, the worst case outcome is I leave it at my feet, right? And it's just like total thrown away shot. I can see that worst case outcome mm-hmm. mentally and maybe even picture it, right? And this seems like, what are we doing thinking about the worst case outcome while you're on the golf course? But you see that and you say, can I accept that? And if you say no, then you're going to be extremely tense over that shot, right? Because you're going to do everything you can to not get that worst case outcome. But if you say, yeah, I can accept that, right? Like it would suck. It'd be uncomfortable. It'd be embarrassing. But honestly, I can accept that. Then you're like able to just freely go in and experience this golf shot in the present, right?
Yeah, that checks out. Okay. That's a good exercise to do. It's kind of like live every day like it's your last. You're like, okay, well, the true meaning of that is coming home at night and being like, all right, that was it. All right. And that's kind of the same thing as doing that on the tee ball. It sounds simple, but it's actually extreme. Like for a competitive player who really doesn't want that ball to go out of bounds, like, can you accept that ball and the two strokes that come with it? And, you know, the fact that you've hit this exact shot for, you know, 16 hours of practice this year, are you okay with that? To say yes is you're walking back on the path that you walked in on and choosing to go down another path. So those are good thoughts. We uncovered some really good stuff here in the last, you know, 15 minutes. Those were some cool tangents.
Okay.
This is great.
Does it feel helpful?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'll take it one step further with my chipping, right? Like I was talking about target and target versus technique, and then control versus being soft. And I think it's probably the same thing with an entire round of golf, right? You were talking about how you're in the driver's seat, you're in control. I think sometimes I forget that, and I look at it more as Marcus Aurelius in the middle of the Colosseum, right? It's like, this is the day. This is what you prepared for. You're in the moment. You're reacting to the things that are happening around you. This is competition. This is not practice. We're no longer focused on long-term improvement because inherently it's a different thing. So I think while I agree with your takes, I think I just looked at it as a completely different thing entirely. The other thing that I'll say is that, what has it been? It's been five years now since I've competed. And there's so much that comes with not playing golf that you learn about yourself. Like Henry mentioned, to a certain degree, like we talk about how much you can learn from people playing golf with them. This is especially true as a competitor. You learn a lot about somebody in 5 hours. And it also is true that the way you approach a tournament round or a tournament or a season or a college career is indicative of who you are as a person, your habits, the framework through which you see the world. And I would be fascinated to do another year, 2 years, 5 years of competitive golf, hoping, thinking, guessing that I would approach it differently than I did 5 years ago. I think that's all I got on the subject, but yeah. I look forward to putting that into practice. I'll report back to you,
please,
about my acceptance on certain shots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Good.
Josh, we had some listener questions, but honestly, I feel like we just squeezed a lot of really nice juice there.
Okay.
And I don't want to risk anything watering down what we just got through. So, okay. We appreciate your thoughts today. Yeah. Got some vulnerability out. We've got some acceptance to work on.
Yeah.
And we are going to be cognizant of anticipation. I think those are the big takeaways. So last question of the day, Josh, you know, you talked about it a little bit at the beginning, thinking about the framework of what competitive golf and entrance back into it might look like for you. I know it's somewhere in your mind of what 2024 could be from a competitive standpoint. Do you know what events that you might want to try to play, or a process of getting back into it? Where's your head at for 2024 competitive golf?
I really want to play in North Carolina. We have we're kind of conjoined North and South Carolina. So we've got the Carolinas Mid-Am and the North Carolina Mid-Am. Those are kind of bookends on the season of ones in the spring, ones in the fall. I would love to do both of those. And kind of in the middle, more towards the end, would be the U.S. Mid-Am qualifier. I'm just, my heart is always in the U.S. Mid-Am. It's just been the biggest part of my golfing career. So I always try to make it a point to either at least attempt and play in that qualifier. As you know, Henry, it's an amazing experience. To just USGA events in general are just the dream. They're just amazing. So I always try to keep that on the schedule, even if it's not realistic, right? Even if my effort cannot possibly match what needs to happen. But 2024 for me is, as much as I can help it, is going to be me creating a structure to allow myself to do what fills me back up, which is hitting balls, getting out to the course, maybe getting to play competitively. Creating that structure to allow me to be able to do that, because I feel like I've earned it. I feel like I deserve it. I don't know if that's unfair or false or whatever, but Every time I talk to my wife about it, she says, please, you're a better person when you come back from the golf course. You're just more yourself. So I see that in myself. So I'm going to try to create that structure and hopefully play 3 or 4 times. Yeah.
Great stuff.
Good stuff. Walker, I'm throwing it to you real quick because I feel like you need to be put on the hot seat there for competitive golf. What's the outline?
I've already been put on the hot seat, actually.
That's fair enough, but I'm going to heat it up one more time.
I've got 2 qualifiers that are in my mind. One is for the Gasparilla Invitational, which you'll be here for shortly, and the second is for the US 4-ball championships. One's on the calendar, one's not, and there are no actual tournaments on the calendar. That's it. That is
just qualifiers.
That's the cold hard truth. No, I mentioned this. I think it was on end of year pod, Henry. Correct me if I'm wrong. But I did some thinking in the last year about Mid-Am golf. And this year, looking ahead to this year, I don't see the next few years being years where I put enough effort into golf practicing or otherwise to justify the effort and the time. Frankly, I'd rather put that into the Thai podcast in the next 3 years. And then we'll see what we can get out of the golf. So that, that's how I feel about it.
Henry?
Yourself?
Yeah, I figured it was probably coming my way as well. Yeah. You know, you mentioned like,
is my putt good? That's 2 feet.
No, it's not for me. You mentioned the Gasparilla. Shit, how far away is that? 5 weeks? I mean, I haven't touched a golf club, looked at a golf club, you know, so that's that. I feel, again, I say this a lot, famous last words. I feel like that's a decent entrance back into competition for the year, in that you can hit a lot of like 4 irons and 2 irons off the tee, I hear. So to some degree, how badly can it go? If you're able to just iron your way around the golf course, at least for me, that's more so my bread and butter. If I start missing greens with wedges, then, you know, the acceptance will have to practice that really quickly. Mm. But anyway, so that's that.
You're in the event though? Like you're not having to do a
call? Yeah. Yeah. In the Gasparilla. I have one or two more similar to that, that are kind of on the calendar. Honestly, for me, it's going to be a balance between, I have 4, 5, 6 of those that I know will likely have a chance to play, and then we'll want to try to qualify for the US Mid-Am and the US Amateur. I would like to do a US Open local, but you know, I've now just outlined probably 9 to 12 days out of the office, and so that's pushing the north end of that spectrum hard. So that'll be the balancing act on my end. So I know that's to some degree a non-answer in terms of like an actual schedule, but I do have a lot of things that I want to play. It's just going to be kind of deciding which pieces of the puzzle I can actually make fit. So that's my answer. It's firmly in my mind, but it's more of a timing thing for me. I don't have the ability to just, you know, fill out every single application that comes my way and correspondingly fill out the PTO forms.
So how do all three of us, we're all three in the exact same boat where we could all three just as easily get to the end of the year and not have played any or one or two mm-hmm. combined, right? So all three of us have to make the actual effort to choose to play. And what I think maybe could help us is bringing, rather than like all the potential, like, oh, this would suck, oh my gosh, like trying to go get to the gym and work out, instead bring the good consequence of what you'll feel, what you'll get having played it, bring that as close to now as possible. And then it makes the path towards doing it a lot clearer. It removes a lot of the barriers, a lot of the friction. And so I've created a plan to actually sign up for it, fill out the PTO, whatever. And here's what I'm going to get. I already know how good I'm going to feel having done it. So it makes it as easy as possible to do it. So maybe that could help us.
That's a good call out. Because it would make you feel great. It does.
It always does. In some way.
Josh, that's a good spot to wrap it. We appreciate your time today. This was a lot of fun talking. Walker, we appreciate your vulnerability. And we'll be back soon.
Yeah, of course. Thank you, guys.